fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, baby! They can't block Calais Campbell.
Cuts right to the five, Brown to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown!
You've got to be kidding me, Carson Palmer.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Welcome into Cardinals Underground, everyone. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard. And when we say welcome, there's going to be a lot of welcome to the NFL moments here in the next week or so. We don't need no stinking training camp to have welcome to the NFL moments. Let me give you guys an example. And I know you talked to some of the staff around the Cardinals facility and some of the equipment guys, and they've been trying to track down some of their counterparts at some of these institutions like Midwestern State and Southeast Louisiana, and trying to figure out, well, what sizes and pad sizes and helmet sizes do these guys wear, the draft picks? And for the most part, those positions don't even exist at that level of football. There is no equipment guy at Southeast Louisiana. It's usually an assistant trainer who has been tasked with taking care of everyone's pads and jerseys and practice shorts and so forth.
Yeah, all these small school guys come in here, and it's going to be a different world, definitely, especially coming to a team that's so good, and everybody's going to be talking about Super Bowls and stuff, and it'll be interesting to see how they acclimate. I remember Marcus Golden came from a big program, but I remember when he came in last year, his head was so big they could barely even find a helmet for him. So we'll see if that happens this year.
It's funny, though. Obviously, they picked some small school guys, and they absolutely did. But you look at that list of the draft picks, at least, and every single one but one was at the combine. It's not like these guys are hidden. They were all at the combine, and Marquis Christian, who went to Midwestern State and didn't go to the combine, he was the best defensive player in all of small school football and was good enough to get invited to the Senior Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, while they are going to be making a jump in terms of, like, you know, having cool Gatorade at every turn whenever they want
right.
it, you know, I don't, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes I feel like the narrative becomes they're finding these guys that no one's ever heard of. And that's not true. These guys were going to get drafted. They might not have been drafted when they did. They might have not been drafted as soon as they did, but, they were going to get drafted.
No, that's a great point. I mean, Rodney Gunter, maybe, Delaware yeah. State, never went to a combine. Yeah. You know, the Justin Bethels of the world at Presbyterian, perhaps. You're right. You look up and down this list, and, you know, it doesn't mean they're not going to come in and still say, hey, wait a minute.
I'm not disagreeing
with you. And here's the thing. I mean, the equipment guys will tell you that they come in, they say, wait, do I have to give this back? They're like, no, those sweats are yours because I got one pair of shorts last year for all the season. No. They'll go ahead, young man, and take those. But what I respect about this draft class is two things. Number one, I get the sense Steve Keim is going for a home run with every single pick.
Yes.
And number two, some of these guys didn't fare well in some of the testing. For example, Cole Toner went to the Senior Bowl and had a pretty underwhelming effort going against D1 level talent. You know, you look at Harlan Miller went to the combine and ran a 4.65. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trusting the film on a lot of this. And that was sort of Keim's final message to the media was, hey, don't let February and March mess up what you saw in September, October, November.
Yeah, and it's an interesting mix because, yeah, some of those guys, like a guy like Cole Toner, was all Ivy League for two straight seasons. And you mentioned Marquis Christian having the award for the small school, being the best defensive player in the small schools. But on the flip side, a guy like Brandon Williams is almost all projection. He only played there for 1 year, but he's, you know, a guy that ran sub 4.4. 40-yard dash, and then he's got the height and the wingspan and everything they want. So it's an interesting kind of a allotment of guys where some of them proved it in college, some of them didn't. Some are projections, some of them, like Evan Bame, can come in and play right away. So it's an interesting class.
It's funny you say that. I mean, I look at this list, and you could make a very strong argument along those lines that other than Bame, they're all projections in terms of
all home run
swings for home runs.
Yep.
Bame's the one guy who you say, okay, he's probably got a ceiling. He's probably not going to be an all pro. Maybe if he gets really gritty and is on some good teams, he gets in there, but he's probably just, you know, Steve Keim compared him to Lyle Sendline, and we'll see.
I've had two other people tell me that, a young Lyle Sendline.
And that's great. Lyle Sendline did start in this league for seven or 8 years, and this guy still has to prove it. But you know, that's a solid pick. But all the other ones, I absolutely agree with you, Paul. I mean, they seem to be the kind of picks. I mean, Toner's a guy who you're picking to be a reserve guy. But all those other picks, you're swinging. You're saying, if this guy pans out, you know, we could have a really good player. And again, you're just, other than Kimdichie, who's your first round pick, if you just hit on two of these other guys, I think you're in pretty good shape. You're not going to hit on them all. It's not going to happen. And so anybody who's ever looking for 100% greatness out of the board, and I think there's something to be said about swinging for the fences and trying getting that great player.
I mean, you look at the video of Marquis Christian. You guys YouTube that up at all from Midwestern State? He is flying around like Ronnie Lott. Yeah. I mean, he is hitting everything in sight. And when you talk to Adrian Wilson, I had a moment to talk with him, and he just said from the moment he was looking at all the players at these workouts, there was one guy that kept standing out. His eye kept going to this one guy, and it was Marquis Christian. And when you watch some of the film, I know it's Midwestern State, and I have no idea what the caliber of competition is, but he is hitting everything, and he's hitting it at high speed from high velocity from a long distance.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by that guy. I think when you look at the roster makeup right now, there's not a bunch of playing time available for him this season, I don't think, with Tyrann Mathieu and Tyvon Branch, and you have Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger. So he's in the mold of some of those guys, but being a rookie from a small school coming in, he'd really have to play really well to get some time. But when you start looking at, you know, two seasons from now, when some of those guys are free agents, maybe you don't bring somebody back and you know, bring him in and let him do it. So I think he's definitely supposed to be a great tackler. He's got some good measurables, so definitely an intriguing guy.
I will say this, that when we talk about Christian, I know a lot of people keep bringing up Daylon Buchanan and that kind of thing, and I'm not saying he can't be in that role, but I saw him when I first saw his size and where they were picking. I told somebody this on Twitter right after he got picked. I don't see Buchanan. I see a bigger Tyrann Mathieu. And then I asked somebody about the Buchanan thing myself, and they said, no, he's probably a bigger Tyrann. So I feel like – I think that's a little bit more – I think people talking about, hey, we're going to drop yet another safety into the box and have him play there most of the time. I'm not saying he couldn't play that role or that he wouldn't play that role, but I think this is more about, again, the straight secondary and having that – versatility that we keep talking about. Branch is a free agent that they signed this year and they like him, but he signed a 2-year deal and he's been in the league 9 years already. And you don't know what's going to happen next year with Tony Jefferson, who's in the last year of his contract or his 1-year contract. So, you know, I think this is a lot about, while these guys are going to play more than DJ Humphries did last year, I think this is more about 2017 and 2018 rather than 2016, other than maybe the special teams, which we keep hearing about they'll be able to help with.
You know, it's funny. I've shouted down a few people on the Daylon Buchanan comparison, too. And to me, the Tyrann Mathieu is intriguing, and especially after now looking at some of his YouTube film, he's a great open field tackler, this Marquis Christian. So there
that's
you go.
Exactly.
That's an absolute
Tyrann.
Ding.
And then the other thing that
but
I
was originally thinking Tony Jefferson. I was thinking I was liking him more to a Tony Jefferson than Daylon Buchanan.
But he's not going to play inside linebacker in the box like that. He'll move up. But
we're on
not.
The same page then.
Yeah, we
we're
are.
Just saying,
absolutely.
It's not
we're on the
Daylon.
Same page.
It's not, we're not, this isn't the dollar linebacker thing.
No, not at all. In fact, I would say this. The days of an in-the-box safety have long gone with this Cardinals defense. There's no such thing. All these safeties, as you guys know, have to be versatile. They're not drafting an in-the-box safety anymore.
Again, the part of the problem with that conversation is that, as of right now, the team is not going to change Daylon Buchanan's position on the roster.
Right.
And he's going to continue to be called a safety.
Yeah.
So
I don't consider him a safety. Do you guys?
No.
No.
They don't put him on the depth chart as a safety either.
No, he's now a dollar linebacker.
So he's a linebacker. So I think if they were willing to change Daylon's position, I think people would stop talking about that as much, because the problem is they keep calling him a safety and then they say, well, he's an in-the-box safety. But I agree with you. He's not. And what these guys are doing, the thing about Christian that caught my ear, especially when comparing it to Tyrann, was, yeah, he's a hard hitter, and the video showed that, and you aren't the first person to bring that up. But the other thing was Steve Keim talking about how he could cover in the slot. That's not Daylon Buchanan.
No, not at all. Here's the other thing. We went into the draft and we're thinking, all right, Cardinals do have needs. Center, corner, safety, D-line. You know the one I missed? Special teams.
Yeah. Yes.
Because they went in, did they not, Kyle? A lot of these guys, especially the DBs they selected on day three, right, are all slotted for special teams duty.
Yeah, and like we're talking about, maybe there's not a ton of time. And, you know, if one of them shows well at corner, you could see them maybe getting in the mix. But when you got a guy as raw as Brandon Williams, it'll be a little tough early on to, you know, get there and try to get playing time. But like they said, these guys can make an impact on special teams right away. They all did it in college, did a nice job, and it's definitely something that Steve Keim had in the back of his mind where, like Bruce Arians was saying, you have to play your position well, but maybe it tipped the scales in their favor if they're deciding between two different guys. We're going to take the guy that can play well on special teams because coverage was definitely an issue last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, and Steve Keim put it on getting so many one-year veterans that don't necessarily play special teams. Mm-hmm. But I agree with that. I think he said that they kind of neglected special teams a little bit. And I tend to agree with that to a certain extent. And I think it's something that they can improve on. And if these guys can step in and do that kind of stuff, I think it would mean a lot in the transition game, as Ron Wolfley would call it.
When you look at Brandon Williams, just the fact, once again, a home run swing, right? The guy with all the measurables, but 1 year as a corner. Yeah. Although he pulled it off in the SEC. And they went with, tell us the John Chavis story real quick, Kyle, and what intrigued them about the defensive coordinator for A&M.
Well, he coached Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu at LSU, and he gave Tyrann Mathieu the Honey Badger moniker. So he
wow. Royalties on that? How does that work exactly?
Really. He needs to start printing T-shirts or something. But he obviously knows good cornerbacks when he sees them, and even though it was his first year, he really pushed for him to move to cornerback from running back. And he got him there, and I don't think he was great this year. I mean, Brandon Williams himself gave him a C for the job he did, but they said the talent is there, and he's a really hard worker, according to Chavis. And he told the Cardinals that this guy's going to come in and work hard and do a good job for you, and that's what the Cardinals wanted because they saw he could run fast and had the height and what they wanted in an outside corner, but are you willing to work to get there? Because it's going to probably take a while for him.
Do you think the day is coming where Justin Bethel will come off special teams, a three-time Pro Bowler in special teams? It could Brandon Williams be the guy, the next special teams ace/assassin, who would be that Justin Bethel and thereby allow Justin Bethel to just be a full-time corner?
I think the option is there. Talking to a couple people after this weekend, because that was my first thought. You get a lot of young, raw cornerbacks that you keep telling us can play special teams. Maybe that's what about it. But it's been made very clear to me that Justin Bethel is not necessarily the starting cornerback, and he's going to have to earn it. And it'll be interesting to see, especially since he's going to be limited, if not miss all of the summer stuff because of his foot injury that he had to take care of. And so you start wondering, can he make those steps in training camp that they need to see? Is he struggling at cornerback because he's got too much on his plate, or is he struggling at cornerback because he's struggling at cornerback? And I think that's something that they need to find out. I think the fact that he'll go into training camp probably with the job as his to lose.
Who's his competition? I mean, we know it's going to be A.Q. Shipley against Evan Bame. Yeah. It's Justin Bethel against who exactly?
These rookies, Kariel Brooks.
I think that's what you're talking about. It would be a major upset if he didn't, but I, at this point, and I'm not saying it can't change, but I know that I was wondering a little bit about, you know, maybe Gerard Powers comes back. I don't think that's something they're going to look at now. Now, will they go through all OTAs and say, oh, you know what, we really need a veteran here? That could change. But I think as of right now, they're thinking we're gonna see what we can do in training camp with these guys. And let me tell you something. They signed a couple defensive backs as undrafted rookies that I'm hearing they have high hopes for. Like, there could be a cornerback that was an undrafted rookie, and I didn't get a name, but there could be a cornerback as an undrafted rookie that makes this team and gets in the mix.
That would be a headline.
And I think even if he does win the job and he's the starter, I think Justin Bethel is so valuable on special teams. And we're just talking about how maybe it was a little bit neglected. I don't think you can pull him off, especially Gunner and the things that he really does really well at punt coverage. I think you got to keep him on there, even if he is starting at corner.
Well, and there's no doubt he makes plays. He changes games, you know, as a special teams guy. There's no doubt. Intriguing to also note that I saw Todd McShay from ESPN said the Cardinals' best pick was the sixth rounder, Harlan Miller, who we gave a fourth round grade. You know, so I mean, what in the Sam name of Andre Ellington or Justin Bethel could be going on here with a sixth rounder? But I mean, so you're saying that if an undrafted rookie free agent could be a contender for serious playing time in one corner. I mean, are we talking out on the island?
No, I'm saying making the team. We'll see what happens in terms of playing time. And even when we talk about Miller and McShay, I mean, you know, again, is that one of those things where, hey, I had him as a fourth round pick and you took him in the sixth, so that's why I like him so much. He'd still be a fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. So you got to wonder about that a little bit.
But Miller is interesting because you think he ran a 4.65 40, which obviously isn't great, especially at cornerback. So you still drafted him, and is he just a completely instinctual player that he can do it, and is he so good at certain things that makes up for that speed a little bit? So they obviously like him for a reason. It'll be interesting to see how he does, you know, against NFL competition.
All right, so I think I could be charged with burying the lead here on Cardinals Underground. Robert Kimdichie, and especially the fact that Darren Urban, you actually rode in from the airport with the Cardinals' first-round pick. Do tell.
I did. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't all that exciting.
Come on
now. But, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, he flew in from Chicago on Friday morning, and I was there when one of the scouts picked him up and had a chance to chat with him a little bit on the ride back over here and spent some time with him in the locker room when he had some downtime that morning. And, you know, it was obviously a short amount of time, and I'm certainly not quizzing him on a whole lot of stuff, and he's on his best behavior too. But, you know, I can see why people like him. I mean, one of the things I liked most about him that I feel like I could take something out of in that short period of time was when he walked in the locker room, and it was Friday, so most players aren't around because in the off-season work, it's usually Monday through Thursday. But there was a couple guys in there. Tyron was in there rehabbing. Patrick was in there getting treatment. There was a couple other players. Chris Johnson was doing some working out. Rob Crisp, the tackle. Every guy that he came across, whether it was Patrick Peterson or Rob Crisp, you know, he made sure he went up to him and he gave him a big bro hug like they had been teammates for 10 years and was really outgoing. And I like that. I like the fact that he was embracing his new team immediately and going after his teammates immediately and showing them, hey, I'm happy to be here and I'm glad to meet you. And it doesn't have to just be Tyron or Patrick. It was anybody who was in the building. So I thought that made an impression on me. And obviously the man is big, and I shook his hand two or three times that morning and it hurts.
Do you know, this is a true story, and this just points to maybe the absurdity of the NFL draft. It was 2 days before the draft. I was talking to one of the Cardinal scouts, and he was telling me about Kindici's hands and that he's got the biggest, thickest hands for a D lineman since Mean Joe Green. That was a quote. And I stopped him. I said, how do you know that? I mean, how would you possibly? You're just making that up. This is just pure hyperbole at this point. There's way to truly track that.
Sounds like Darren can vouch for it, though.
Again, I can't vouch if he's got the biggest hands. They're obviously big, but the grip that he shakes your hand with, right. I mean, it left an impression and a little bit of pain.
They should add that to the combine next year.
You know, so, I mean, look, I think these guys did a heck of a lot of homework on him. I talked to somebody else after it was all over, and we were just talking at that point. So I know all the stuff on the record about, hey, we believed him. I had somebody else tell me, look, if he is not the real deal, if he turns out to have issues and washes out, I will be the first to admit he fooled me because I believe in this guy. That's what I was told. So I think to a man, whoever met with him with this team believes in what he's selling and believes that whatever off-field issues he had is not going to be an issue, and they believe he's going to be a great player for this team. I think there was much celebrating when he was on the draft board when they picked.
I mean, they met with him at the combine. They met with him on campus. Mm-hmm. They met with him here in the AZ, where he got to meet all his, you know, future teammates. I was also told, though, they were not certain, to Darren's point, until the Monday before the draft, when GM Steve Keim and team president Michael Bidwill flew out to LA and met with him one more time. Mm-hmm. And so I find that interesting. There's so much about his background that's interesting. I mean, he plays jazz saxophone and bass guitar. I mean, his father's a cardiologist. His mother's a politician. I didn't share a Cadillac Escalade with him from the airport, okay?
It was just a Suburban, Suburban.
But I can already tell he's going to be a singular personality. There's going to be nobody else like him on this team.
And that was the interesting thing when I talked to him after his introductory press conference. He was saying that he thought more than the fall and the legal trouble that he got into, the one incident before the Sugar Bowl where he got suspended, he said he thought some of the other teams were a little bit put off just by his personality, because he is kind of this multi-layered guy. And Brenson Buckner afterwards said, you know, we don't want all cookie cutter, same personalities. We embrace this sort of thing. So it's interesting to me that, you know, this is a team that seemingly will bring those guys in and, you know, we'll welcome them with open arms, because Coach Arians is a personality that isn't like a lot of the other coaches, and I think he enjoys it. And if Kim Dichie feels comfortable here, I think it will help on the field as well.
As one scout told me, if he excels, if he truly maximizes the effort, then he will be the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. And could easily be the best player in the draft. That's what one scout told me.
I mean, just seeing the way his frame and his athleticism, it's hard to argue with it. I mean, he can do some amazing things.
And you know what's interesting? I talked to another assistant coach, and he said that they quizzed him about, you know, this inconsistent motor. Mm-hmm. And they actually sat down with game film and said, well, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. What are you doing there? Why aren't you getting after the quarterback here? And he said, well, coach, my assignment there was to two gap. I'm responsible for space.
Yeah.
That I'm not, and here I'm going against a spread offense, and I'm not allowed to just, you know, rush the passer with abandon.
Interesting.
But the games where they played against the teams with the pro style attacks, the Alabamas, the Mississippi State game, LSU, I mean, he was a fierce competitor. It was almost unblockable, and that was a byproduct of the system the other team ran.
One of the things that struck me when Brenson Buckner was talking about him was it was brought up. In fact, I believe you brought it up. You and your brilliant questions, Paul Calvisi.
Okay. Now you have my attention.
when you asked him about the inconsistent play and the inconsistent effort. And Buckner basically said, look, he's out there playing 90 plays because it's college and he's the best player, right, and you're going to leave him out here. He's not going to play 90 plays for us. He's not going to play every play. We're going to rotate these guys regardless. And if you
put, he said 30, 35 plays.
That's what he said. He said, instead of 90 plays, if you take what he has and you have him do it over 30 plays, what are you going to get? And who wouldn't want that?
Yeah.
And it's kind of mind-blowing when you watch a couple highlights to think, okay, if he gives you all he's got for 30 plays and is able to rest in between, that's something pretty impressive.
A bigger Aaron Donald? I mean, I hate to project, but so you're
I'll
telling
take that.
if he only plays 30 to 35 plays, sounds like he's got some extra plays left over for offense, Kyle.
Oh boy.
Right? Didn't you tweet out a video of like a touchdown grab?
Yeah, see, I shouldn't have done that. Now the imaginations are gonna run
Come
wild.
Come on now. What's the over under on BA using him?
Zero
plays.
Come on. Before the bye, he's on offense. No. Who wants a piece of that action? Who wants to bet
I will
that?
Say that video is because it's a little bit, it's a play action fake and they run some guy deep and then he comes out of the backfield in the flat and no one's around him, but as soon as he catches the ball, oh my God, that dude's like 290 pounds and he's flying.
I can't tell you how many times Voice of the Cardinals Dave Bash has grabbed me and Wolfley by the lapels and said, you don't understand, when you stand next to this guy in pads and you watch him just go through pregame warmups, your jaw drops just watching him in action. He said him and Leonard Fournette, by far the two biggest freaks in 2015 through all of college football.
And you mentioned, you know, him playing the two gap in some responsibilities in college. Here, they want them to penetrate. They want him to hit that one gap and go hard. And if that fits his skill set, like you're saying, then for those 30 to 35 plays, it'll be fun to watch, especially if you put him in there on clear pass rushing situations where he can just get after it. He could definitely have a big impact as a rookie.
All right, 16 rookie undrafted free agents were signed. I'm scanning the list right now. Of course, I can tell you about everyone. well,
two long snappers, Paul.
None of them except Alabama QB Jay Coker, who had a pretty good season for Bama,
he
obviously.
Did. He did, and then he went undrafted. And, there was a record like 16 quarterbacks drafted. So
But he played well in the postseason. The semifinal game in the championship game, he played really well. And then, of course, you got the intriguing storyline I'm sure you guys will write about with his QB coach, who is
Freddie Kitchens,
the former
Alabama quarterback.
Yeah, so,
but again, you're talking about a guy, and we'll see what happens. He'll battle Matt Barkley, but you fall on that same thing playing for Alabama, or when Matt Leinart was playing for the incredible USC teams. You fall on that thing. How much of it was them, and how much of it was the incredible talent around them?
as coaches used to tell us off the record with Matt Leinart, see, a receiver is open at USC by about 3 yards. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, you're open by 3 inches. Mm-hmm. And he never quite was able to make that transition.
Yeah.
And that was it. So next time we go with Cardinals Underground, I expect you guys to educate us on the other 15 undrafted
free
agents.
You want to do it right now?
And the long snapper. Oh, really? Wow, talking
we've
tough
had,
over there.
We've had about 2 hours of prep
okay.
time.
How about the long snapper from Campbell? Can you tell us about him?
He's a winner.
Nice. Where is Campbell? For bonus points right now, I didn't know where Midwestern State was until today. It's somewhere in Texas.
Okay.
What about Campbell? Anybody?
I don't know where Campbell is, but okay. I think their team website is gocamels.com, so that's a good one.
All right. Well, there's your homework assignment. Cardinals Underground, Paul Calvisi, Kyle Odegaard, and Darren Urban on azcardinals.com.